Hello.
Hey.
We have a bit of change with our recording time, so I'm a little bit disorganized as always, but nonetheless, it's Biweekly Cast. It's Biweekly Cast number 35. The host is still here, and the hosts are you.
I'm Slava Rudnitsky, and you are?
And I'm Dima Malenko, and today we are going to work. No, we are not going to work. We are going to talk. We are going to talk about what I called or referred to as working asynchronously, and we will, down the line, we will see if it makes a lot of sense.
And since this is your episode or your inspired by you episode, we should have a follow-up, but there is no follow-up. So we could jump straight to the theme corner first before we get to the actual topic.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. As you remember, the topic, not, did you say topic? It's a theme. It's not a topic. Yeah, I think I also made this mistake maybe a couple of times, but yeah. So the theme for this year for me is this next year of next. So it's not the next year. That's the year of next. It's this year is, which is the year of next, and I think it's I'm starting with it, and I felt, as I started going, I felt like, it would be useful. There is something I can accomplish by focusing on some specific elements in a season or in a month, and I decided to follow your suit and also have kind of seasonally and monthly themes, and for now, I'm in a winter of headroom. And the idea there is that in order for something next or something new to come in, something old has to go. And one of the things that I felt like holding me back at least a little bit was that I was always and still am to an extent always loaded with stuff. My head is full of stuff, and when it's full of stuff, it's difficult to let something new in or let something new in more or less seriously. And this is one of the things I'm trying to focus on for the winter, to see how I can give myself more headroom.
That makes a lot of sense. And have you thought of activities that should potentially give you this headspace?
There are two things, one which is kind of failing and one which is going okay. And the one which is going okay is related to the monthly theme, which I decided that, all right, there is a couple of things that I do that are sort of procedural, where I oversee processes that just go. There is an element of creativity in them, but that's not as much, and more energy and time goes into just making a thing move forward, and it would benefit from processes there being more refined, more documented, so that more people can get involved. And I decided to focus in January specifically on all sorts of process improvements around what I'm doing, and I specifically said no to some other activities or some other projects or tasks I could have done to focus on things related to processes. And I think it's going fine. It does help me to create that additional headroom by automating or improving some of the stuff. One other thing that didn't go as well was I thought, all right, this is going to be a winter of headroom, and there is an app by similarly sounding name called Headspace. Like, what if
and the Polycom, yeah.
What if I try to use it and kind of to slow down a little bit, to calm myself down, to create that headspace, and through that create the headroom? I think in this month I used it exactly once. And there is something to think about. It's kind of it turned out to be very difficult to weave it into my daily sort of schedule. But I guess that's not the schedule's problem. It's my problem. It's my schedule. So I can do something about it. It's just I didn't manage or didn't get to do anything about that. But I thought it was funny.
Curious. And how I believe in Headspace, you can pick the length of the meditation that you're taking, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes or more. Which one have you tried?
None of that. And that may be a problem with the app as well, because when I just signed up, this was my first time with this app, and it allows you some kind of guidance or guidance courses or something along those lines. And I decided, and the interface is not very clear at all. There are so many kind of different options, and I decided, all right, let's see how you can guide me towards the light. And I started one of those kind of guidance things, and I did it exactly once. And it was they invite users to start light, so it was like 3 to 5 minutes, something like shorter thing. And I still don't understand the app, given that I maybe opened it like 3-4 times only.
I guess I was meditating with Headspace for a year and a half, but it was before this new design. And it looked very different. When I tried for the second time, I didn't really figure out. Plus, they've changed the subscription model. Now it's yearly only, I guess. Mm-hmm. And previously, it was a monthly subscription as well.
But so it was interesting experience. I'll give it another try.
Well, there are always alternatives like Calm or just guided meditations on YouTube that could work as well.
Thank you. Can you trust people on YouTube with something like this? Something as intimate as meditation? Do you want to get people from YouTube into your head?
I would say that I mostly use it for just the music and the sounds, not the actual guidance. If I would like to spend some time, I would just take the headphones and turn on something for 10 minutes, so I would know it's 10 minutes, and then just focusing on my mind, on where my thoughts flow and my body, and that kind of works. It's not super guided, it's not super structured, but it works for me.
It makes sense. I'll give it another try. I hope I can find time for that, and I'll report back how it goes.
So that would be it about your theme or anything else?
No, I think one other interesting thing is about journaling. I got back into it and I do it more or less regularly, definitely more regularly than once a week. It's almost daily. Sometimes I kind of miss it, but that's all right. And I thought in the previous episode, I already shared that I'm using this bullet journal, and that's kind of going. One interesting thing about this is that by and large, this journal is not as rigid as the themed journal, because there is nothing. You just start with empty page. And I found that surprisingly liberating in a sense. I transferred kind of the sectional structure from original themed journal, like following the experience I had previously. But then at some point I decided, with what I'm doing now, it would make sense to adjust that a little bit. And I adjusted. And this is what I'm doing now. I put a couple more pages forward where I put the questions I want to answer, but not more than that. And then I kind of, from time to time, reconsider how I structured journaling for a theme, which I thought was an interesting idea, and it helped me. And one other thing is, in theme journal, we don't have empty pages or something, and it might be, maybe in the new theme journal, they would have something for a month or something along those lines, but I found that thing also helpful when I changed a theme from, set myself a theme for a month. I used a separate dedicated page to kind of track how well I'm thinking I'm doing in that department, which was also sort of helpful.
Yeah, I think I'm with you here. I don't think I'll be ordering another theme system journal. but I really like their subtle notebooks, which are basically just blank pages, and they could easily go for both themes and free writing.
Cool. So that's it, and then we can jump into the topic, which I think might be a bit challenging for me to articulate in a way that other people like you would understand and agree. And I'm not certain at all that this is kind of a real deal or a real problem or real challenge. And we probably are going to determine through the course of this episode.
Just to double check, other people like you is some kind of discrimination, or are you discriminating yourself, saying that you have difficulties articulating it to anyone else?
No, I'm discriminating myself. I'm just conscious of the fact that I might be giving it more importance and significance than it deserves.
Well, let's give it a try and see what happens.
Right. So let's try. So the idea or the challenge, I think, that might be there, that some of us often, or maybe even always, depending on what you're doing, we have projects that fall into that quadrant of important or kind of relatively important, but not urgent. And you would want progress on such projects to be done, but it's not in the forefront of anyone's mind, of those people who are involved in that project. And as such, it might be difficult to get those projects moving forward because they are not highest priority for anyone involved. There are no traditional project management or project control routines that are in place, like daily meetings or more or less regular things. The work happens mainly in async ways through online async communication, and because of that, those projects, at least in my experience, have tendency of moving rather slowly and sometimes not moving at all until you switch them into full priority mode with regular work routines. Did you come across anything like that? I think it might be a little bit similar to your co-creation of L&D course, but I think that project of yours probably was a little bit higher priority than things I'm describing, or maybe not. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. What I think here is that you basically describe these projects as important but not urgent, and then you say that they are low priority, which kind of contradicts a bit, because if it is important, even if it's not urgent, it is quite high.
Right. I think you're right. Maybe the use of word priority was not appropriate here. What I meant to say is projects that are deliberately using the much smaller portion of the workday, or at least on paper, and because of that, they can get pushed out when something comes up on the quote-unquote main project.
You know, I'd say that it's not really time-dependent for me, because I think an activity could be really short, like 15 minutes, and it could be still important and stay there from week to week, from month to month, from day to day, no matter what it is. And it could be relatively time-consuming and large and actually take up a lot of time and still get pushed. I can time block and then move those time blocks and over plan the calls and move the calls. Like, it doesn't really depend on the volume. Mm-hmm. I think it more depends on the significance and deadlines. And these two factors basically mean, like, if there is no specific deadline, like updating our website, it's a huge thing. Like, you can dig very deep into it. And if you don't set yourself a deadline, you will probably spend forever doing that. So such things, they just don't move without a deadline at all. And this is what was happening with L&D course. Before I got partners with People First Club, and we scheduled a release of the course to October, then all right, now there are 4 months, and it's time to move on. And it accelerated a lot when we saw the release date.
Mm. This is interesting. This is a very profound observation, I think, because as you were speaking, I was thinking, don't the things I have in mind for these kind of projects have characteristics of more kind of process ongoing activities rather than a project which has a specific goal, and with that projects would often have a specific date by which they're going to be completed. And if you don't have this, and even if it's important and kind of useful activity that we are doing, it might be indeed difficult to get it going. But that's an interesting, very interesting thought. So it might not be a project that I'm talking about here, but more of activity.
Yeah, maybe some regular practices. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we take some things that potentially should happen regularly, mm-hmm. like a retrospective or mm-hmm. something, you could survive without one. It does make your work more effective if it's run properly, but especially right. when you had some negative experience, like I did with some calls on budgeting in Sevi. I wasn't prepared enough, then the call didn't go right, and I kind of struggled with the next call, so I postponed mm-hmm. it once, then twice, then it didn't go right. And it's more of an emotional thing. But if I would like to integrate it, it should make more sense. I should be preparing for it, spending time, and getting it right, if it makes sense.
Right, and maybe we can talk about some of the ways we can get those things right. Right, so that's great. This is the benefit of discussing the definitions of stuff ahead of time, because then we can be a bit more precise and kind of fine tune our understanding and get to the same page. I'm happy that we did that. Unfortunately, I was not able to, even though I imagined and I think I shared with you that I'll find some materials for us to hang the discussion on. To my dismay, I was not really able to, because the topic itself is a bit amorphous. Like we spent however much time discussing what that really is, and I was not able to find anything of any relevance on the internet for this topic. But I witnessed firsthand this phenomenon that is referred to as anxietification of the internet. I think one of the internet writers and stuff like that, I think it's Cory Doctorow, who is a kind of internet journalist, blogger, whatever, kind of coined this term in reference to the idea that when content is created for the internet, for Google most of all, it is created for Google such that it ranks higher at the expense of people being able to read this. And I experienced this like full at full height trying to search materials for this topic. Have you noticed that things like that going on the internet?
I think I remember this feeling a few years ago, but then I switched to a bit different mode of search. Mm. And if I search for a really weird topic, I would normally either start with some Wikipedia articles and source pages there, or from images. And whenever I can see a nice design of something, it's usually when people put some effort in it. There could be a chart, a graph, or whatever kind of infographics, and this could be a good starting point. So I don't start with web text pages.
Interesting. Maybe I should try something like this, or maybe, I don't know. I wouldn't suggest trying ChatGPT, because some of the articles I read and searching, they sounded as if they were written by artificial intelligence. Like a quick example, I was looking for asynchronous work or sync projects or something along those lines, and an article was, "What is asynchronous work? 8 best practices for more efficient teams." Like, sounds maybe vaguely, slightly relevant. One of those 8 best practices was use the right tools and communication channels. Wow, that's profound. I feel enlightened now. Like, but And the rest of the text, which was rather big, was pretty much the same. Anyone could have written it just to make this page would be found by Google for certain terms, which is not great. Which is not great.
So, speaking of these habits,
mm-hmm.
are those your solo routines or something that engages other people? Some rituals for the team.
Yeah, I think what I have in mind is most of all projects or activities or things that involve other people. When I feel like when you are alone, you can get over yourself and kind of get things done more or less with a bit of planning, with a little bit of allocation time here and there. But when it's a little bit bigger and there are other people involved for whom this is not the project that occupies most of their time or most of their mind, like something where you agree on paper that, oh, I'll spend like 4 hours a week on this, and then you can imagine, well, I can imagine, and I wonder if you can imagine that people can eat into those 4 hours with activities that happen in the rest 36 hours.
Well, you know, in my experience, it works very differently because for me, group activities are actually more, I just feel more responsible
mm-hmm.
and something I should prepare for, something I can't really delay because of the social commitment, and things that I have to do solo, like, you know, reviewing financial charts. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I should do it in the beginning of every month. Like, first mm-hmm. days of the month should be the financial review. I normally postpone it like to the middle of the month, and it's always there. It's in the calendar. Like, I know there is a slot for it. Here it is. And then like something more important happens. But if it's a team meeting on OKRs,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I will postpone it because like, all right, I've agreed with people. People have prepared. I have been working to deliver and show something, like I should come and do something there, even though both of them are just regular monthly checkups.
Interesting. I think, well, once again, when you are talking, I start getting ideas, and then I think, could it be that, well, it would be difficult for you to answer the question. Could it be that I think that XYZ? Because how would you know? But I think it might be that one of the things that rubs me the wrong way around these projects is that it feels, if you're leader of a project and if you try to drive it towards somewhere, things happen only when you are actively kind of pushing. Like on other projects, you can get more out of, all right, we planned something, that there are commitments in XYZ, and next time, oh, like stuff got done. On this project, maybe I feel that when you come next time, you don't always, or if ever, get this feeling of stuff that got done, and you feel like you constantly need to do something to push, to ping people, do this and that to get things moving along, and maybe this is the thing that bothers me. I'm not sure. What's your experience there?
I think I get frustrated when people don't buy it at first.
Mm-hmm.
First few tries are crucial, and if people are not engaged, it's kind of demotivating. If you see that, like, I guess I'm the only one who actually needs that. And especially when you see it's important. Like, we were researching online tools and Zoom in 2017,
mm-hmm.
and I was the only one who knew that, like, guys, we should invest in this. Like, remote is growing, and things are might change, we should really discover that. And I was pretty much the only one who thought so. But I pushed it long enough so we could have a review of the different tools, seeing the functionality, some checklists. We tested out WebEx, Zoom, and other Google Meets and other platforms before COVID. So when COVID actually happened, we already had all the tools checked and all the checklists ready. We just had to polish them, see what's new, and get the ball rolling. But I can remember how frustrating it was that nobody saw what I saw.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to pause here for a moment and appreciate the level of foresight that you have had in 2017 to push your company to research the tools geared towards remote work. So that kudos to you there. And maybe we can pick a little bit into that project, because one other idea that I got after listening to you is that on that one, did you have a deadline for the research? And could it be that maybe you or we, as when we kick off some of those projects, we might have a deadline in mind, kind of in our mind, like we say, oh, like it would be possible to do that in like 1, 2, 3, what, however many months or weeks or whatever it is, but we do not really communicate this idea with people and get buy-in for the deadline just because this is a back burner project, and then we get frustrated when things are not moving along towards our internal vision of deadline.
I think I'm not really frustrated when people don't engage intensively, because then I just know that maybe I haven't explained things. Mm-hmm. As an example, I've set up managerial meetings from different teams. Like, they don't actually work together. They didn't work at the time. But I wanted them to exchange some context and share what was going on, to talk about practices, basically making like a community rather than a managerial meeting, mm-hmm. exchanging news. And there was huge resistance. Like, we have stuff to do. Like, we mm-hmm. don't really want to do that. And there was this one person who enjoyed that. A few people who had to do it because I asked. And then a few people who were actually quite skeptical. And at certain moment, I said, like, all right, let's just give up. Like, I don't see it working. It's not very useful. I give up. Then I tried to reset. Mm-hmm. We were collecting the agenda points and made it more organized. Didn't fly. Like, it wasn't working anyway. And when I said for the second time, all right, like, we cancel these meetings, I can't really manage them. Mm-hmm. And then the team said, well, actually, that was kind of useful. And they initiated the next meetings to exchange the context. I'm not the owner of this process anymore. So I just come as a visitor or as a guest to these meetings, and the team is managing the meetings and setting the deadlines and choosing when to meet next time, which is the agenda, by themselves.
This is interesting. I first started thinking as you were describing about this meetings and stuff like that, and work with rigid structures and more flexible kind of freeform activity, and it sounded like you described that you tried both, like with agendas it didn't fly, without agendas it didn't fly either, or not as much, because people were not contributing, were not engaged enough, which was interesting in and of itself for structuring this kind of or similar kind of activities. But then the latter part where you said that when you cancelled sort of it, there was someone who stepped up and said, like, oh no, we think there is value in this, I would imagine there was some one person who said, like, let me maybe organize or take care of that. Was this the case?
You'd be surprised, but pretty much everyone except me. I was against the meetings, saying, like, guys, we shouldn't do that. Like, we've tried this, we've tried that. And as they were brainstorming different formats, I said, no, but we've tried that. Like, it didn't work. Like, it didn't work. Let's try something else. Like, all right, I'll try whatever you want.
This is because I was kind of driving at the idea that if you as a leader maybe kind of start and accept that you would need to push this stuff and expend energy to get stuff going, with the passage of time, there, if this thing is useful, there would be someone who would kind of pick it up and step up to drive it further or better or something along those lines. It looks like in this example it was not the case.
Yeah, to my surprise, even people who used to be skeptical were ones who didn't want to let it go.
Interesting. Isn't this an not an example or something that can be used as an illustration if you were doing a presentation about team management, best team management practices, like how was the title? 8 best practices for more efficient teams. Isn't this an example of how you sometimes do that with kids when you trick them? I don't want to use the word
manipulate. Reverse psychology.
Yeah, reverse psychology. Don't sleep to get them asleep as fast as they can. It's like, you know, no, like we are not doing these meetings. No. We stop right there. And someone would push back. Just...
Well, in my case, it was not intentional. I was actually giving up. Like, I thought, like, doesn't work and doesn't bring value. And when I wrote about it, people said, no, it actually does.
Well, that's interesting. That's a food for thought in that experience that you shared with us. Yeah, thanks for doing this. And one of the questions I had around this whole stuff, when you were engaged in those projects or ran projects of this nature, of course we established that the nature of this project is a bit vague. But did you use any unconventional tooling or methods other than reverse psychology to get them moving along? Anything or anything?
Do you think we should describe conventional methods before?
Well, conventional, like what you would expect from a regular project, but without much of online, let's say, component of regular meetings and stuff like that. Like task tracker or something along those lines.
It's hard for me to say because most of the managers in our team use different task trackers, so there is not one thing that is conventional. Like our R&D team prefers Asana, and some people have task managers in Notion, just like me. In L&D community, we just do the text updates in the chat on a monthly basis because there is not so much happening. So I don't really have a single task manager. That's why it's kind of hard for me to say which one is more conventional, which one is less. They're all kind of unconventional. There's no convention.
All right. Okay. So anything that jumps out for you in that department, anything that, let's put it this way, anything that you would consider unconventional, like something that you would use on this kind of project, which you would not normally use on regular conventional project.
Well, I think that for these kind of things, well, it still depends because in my mind, these kind of things is very vague. And let's say it's a monthly meeting in L&D community, fully volunteered, people do whatever they like, no pressure, no deadlines. And our agenda for the meetings could be filled by anyone who wants to contribute. So there's no strict managerial thing. Plus, there is no decision making by the manager there. If something is accepted by the community, by people, it works. If it's not accepted, it doesn't work. Let's say somebody wants to go for a new crazy initiative, like let's get another project running. My personal opinion, like, whoa, guys, we do have like 5 projects that we can't complete now, and we don't have focus and time, and we postpone them. And do you think we need the 6th one? But if people feel like that, all right, let them try. I probably wouldn't do that in business context, like in my actual team, if I see that people are overwhelmed or not actually delivering what they should on the core projects. I wouldn't really let some side projects happen unless they were rational or explained or motivational or something that makes a lot of sense to me. But here, like, yeah, sure. If you'd like another 6th track, please go for it.
I like this where you say, like, more power to people, but not too much, because if people at work get overwhelmed, we don't want them to get burned and to miss deadlines on other projects, right? Good stuff. And here, one related question of tooling. I think one of the tools quote-unquote tools for moving those projects along, as when leader would bug or ping other people to get stuff sort of done. Even when they commit to something, it may slip through the cracks and would move slower. So you would need to bug people from time to time. And this is activity that I accept that needs to be done, but I'm least favorite of, because I kind of don't like doing that. Do you have ideas for how to make this, I don't know what's the English term for this, but in Ukrainian we would say ecologically, like in
maybe considerate,
in a considerate way? Yeah,
well, I would start with your first attitude towards this process, because if you think you're bugging people, you probably are.
Good stuff.
If I remember some pings and reminders that people give to me, there are, I distinguish them into two categories. Ones that I find actually helpful, right, and ones that are kind of passive-aggressive, and I can see that from the text. And then I feel kind of defensive. They could be pretty much from the same person, but on different projects.
Mm-hmm.
And the key difference is that in the first case, I really feel that the person cares about me and about the project, and ready to accept a no, or really commits to help, not just like, if there is anything I could do, please let me know, but actually suggests some steps and ideas and gets engaged and asks about my new deadlines or whatever works for me. I could think of 3 to 4 people who do it very well. Like, I learn from these guys how to really remind me about my commitments and deadlines in a very considerate way, with respect and with care and with emotional engagement. And then there's the second category where I can definitely see that it's like a ChatGPT rewritten text. When you would ask ChatGPT to say, like, your deadline was on Friday, where is the result? Please rewrite it in a polite way. And ChatGPT, like, oh, I'm just here to ask whether everything is going fine. In case there is anything I could do, feel free. These kind of things are annoying. So I would split those into two categories.
Well, this is nice. I have three thoughts about this. Let's try to catch them. First, I think, would be about the idea that you started with, that there can be two kinds of those nudges that we get from people. And I was also thinking about, along the same lines, that when I get those nudges, I guess most of the time I would feel that they're kind of helpful. And that may be because people really show care about what they are, why they are nudging me, and the way how they are doing. And I think that this is important. I think maybe I underappreciated this element of it, because when I said, like, bugging people, like, bugging is the second, it falls in the second category of passive aggressive, where you need thing to be done and you care about the project or the result more than about the other person. And if you make it to care about the person, it would have better, it would yield better results in the end. I think that this is a very, very important thought. That this was the first one. And the second one was about the passive aggressive thing. I kind of just connected, you know, how in aviation and stuff, they sometimes use abbreviation PA for public announcement. I thought, like, maybe PA stands for passive aggressive as well. And, like, let me do a PA. You're going to make an announcement that's going to sound so passive aggressive towards people who are going to hear it. This was the second thought. And the third thought, maybe for the first time in this in the history of this podcast, I managed to express all of those things. The way how you described how you enacted the ChatGPT response, like passive aggressive ChatGPT response, I feel like it might give people ideas for startups or something. Like, can you imagine, like, ChatGPT, can you please ping such and such on this project? And then ChatGPT, instead of sending a text, it would send them voice message or like whatever it is that they can send, and it will be like, hello, I'm here to help for sure. Where is this project or like deliverable that you were supposed to deliver on Friday? Is there anything I can do to help you to be in line with the timelines of our projects and not miss your commitments and stuff like that?
Wouldn't Fortunately that be nice? For us, ChatGPT doesn't do voice messages just yet.
And not yet. I think it can do voice communication when you pay and ask it.
Yeah, I'm sure politely. Can you download it? And...
No, I don't think so. But you can record. You can use something like Audio Hijack that we use to record it.
All right, yeah, that's fair. I thought more of meme generation because it can generate images and you could ask to make a meme based on a theme. And
then you can turn it into the next level of passive-aggressive. You generate a theme. Meme for this, and then you say, well, it's just accidentally over the internet I ran into this meme, which I guess is very topical for the situation that we have, and you take, smash the person with that meme.
It's, you know, one of those little hints, like leaving a time management book on someone's desk.
Oh, that's subtle passive aggressive, right? SPA.
And kind of expensive.
but there, can you just buy a prop for a time management book? Not the book, not the real book, like the one that they use to fill in the shelves so that to make sure that your cabinet or your stuff looks nice. And you would not expect the person to read this book, would you? It's just put a brick that looks like a book on their desk. But I guess don't follow this idea. Stick to the first one. Like, care about the people who work on your project, and this is how things will get moving along. In the end, I think we are running to an end here. I wanted to run by you two ideas for strategies that I'm trying to think of and maybe experiment a little bit with getting those projects like this move along. And one I call pull versus push strategy, and the idea being that the push strategy is straightforward. You are there, you are a leader, but you push there, you nudge people, you kind of devise plans together with people, but by and large you expend energy to get project moving along by kind of pushing people forward. And I think the big danger, big downside of this approach is that as soon as people get used to this style of work, and as soon as you stop nudging them and you stop bugging them, you stop investing energy into this, like, things would pretty much grind to a halt. That's my expectation. And I think I saw this a number of times. And contrary to this, the pull strategy would be to somehow, like, if I want a particular thing to move in a particular direction, to find a way to create a little bit of vacuum ahead of the thing so that it pulls everything towards that thing. And instead of kind of pushing people forward, you kind of run ahead and do some sort of magic to create it, kind of like a little bit of a pull force that will pull everything forward, and hopefully maybe sort of create a little bit of inertia so that things get moving along, even if you stop investing much energy into making things going. Does it make any sense to you? Or is it too vague in terms of how I describe it?
I just think that you kind of colored the push thing as negative and pull as positive right now. And for me, it's more push and pull way, because with the same person, depending on kind of activity it could be useful sometimes to push and sometimes to pull, depending mm-hmm. on what is going on. If there is a blocker or something that is not very sexy, like financial reports, like show me people who like financial reports. I know very few. And in this case, no matter how hard you pull, mm-hmm. I don't think it's possible. Unless you create some super incentive or substitution or link it with something else. But like, this thing by itself should probably be pushed in my experience. And if it's something meaningful connected to goals related to person's agenda, and in this case, of course, giving more space and encouragement works very well. And both could be applied to the same person during the same meeting at the same time and work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess the way you kind of articulated my juxtaposition of this two thing kind of has a kernel of truth to this. Because indeed, I would, from a selfish perspective, I would see the push method as a negative, because I can, like, thinking of myself, I can only push as much or as many things or as many people, and I want something that's more scalable. Therefore, I kind of file this pushing thing in the more negative category. But of course, I think you are right. It's a combination of both, and maybe moving a needle a little bit. If pull, I feel like, is a bit more scalable, but it's more difficult to achieve. And as you pointed out, it might not be applicable in all of the situations where we need to move things forward. Yep, that's an interesting thought. And thanks for that. In your practice, do you use any of those approaches? Any kind of specific? Mm-hmm.
I think it's just different kind of motivators, and they both work. Even for me, like, sometimes when I'm pushed, I'm more effective. Sometimes when I'm pulled, I'm more effective. Mm-hmm. It does depend on the project and the nature of it. So I think it works pretty much for everyone. And, you know, as they say, you should not give people what you would like to get for yourself, but you should treat people the way they would like to be treated. And I think that overprotection in this case, like, if you think that pulling is more scalable and it gives more authority and freedom and engagement, but then there is, I don't know, a project or initiative that people hate. There is quite long distance between hating it and being thrilled and enthusiastic about something. And in such cases, maybe I would do none of those. I would just look for another person or someone else to fill in the role. So it's either push or pull or ignore or skip or just find an alternative.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I have another passive aggressive idea here. So can we for retrospective, like regular retrospective for a project, should we have a question like, do you hate this project? And let everyone share and express their feelings towards the project.
Add an abbreviation like BPA, biweekly and passive aggression. Like, that was a BPA. And it's a three-letter abbreviation.
Yeah, it's TLA.
TLA. Yeah.
But I think BPA is already, it has something named BPA in chemistry or biology, I think. But
passive baby clan aggression.
Yeah, but when did this stop us? And one other thing, I think one of the ideas how I used this to created the pull strategy for projects when I believe that kind of there is a value and benefit in doing something, and not even though people had the knowledge, the expertise, the talents to contribute, like massively contribute to the thing, they did not really buy into the idea from the first day. And that could be for different reasons, just because maybe they felt already overwhelmed, and yeah, maybe this is nice, but then don't have time for your nice thing and stuff like that. And a strategy that I tried to implement for those cases was to kind of get some intermediate results out, to kind of start getting feedback from the rest of the world and kind of show the demand that, oh, people are interested in this. Like, if we invest more and do more, some good things can come out of that. And in some cases that worked, in some cases that didn't work and created an opposite effect where everyone else was reluctant and was like, okay, maybe you should stop this project altogether. But more often than not, it worked. Do you think that idea that like this has legs? Have you tried anything similar?
I think it was Kotler, a change management model, when he said that you should celebrate the first steps very much when you change something. And you should really endorse people who are into it and highlight like how much you appreciate it publicly as much as you can to show that this is something really cool. And it kind of reminds me the way we were introducing Notion. Imagine a company that lives in Google Docs. Like we've been using Google Docs for ages. And then I come here with an idea of the knowledge base. Nobody's happy with it. People don't want extra work, rearrange their knowledge bases and review their documentation. That's not fun. And everything works for them. So like, why would they bother? And then I say like, well, guys, let's just make a little team spaces for just us as managers to get some room. And there's one person who does it first. I'm like, oh, just check it out. It's so comfortable. Like I've already used it 3 times and it works very well. And then the person's like, well, I actually enjoyed doing that. And then I support some other people and then some other people. And now Notion is our most used tool and go-to place because it took us a year and a half, but people got into the process. So I think that even in notes you wrote version 0.5, I think 0.05 would work, or maybe 0.005 would also work, or even just the concept check with people. Could work if you just draft something without doing it first. People get engaged into the discussion, and then you can see that, all right, I have these 3 people who are potentially in.
Yeah, I think that might be a situation where a picture, proverbial picture, is worth 1,000 words. If you show something, those who understand, and if they really feel the pain or something around some area, they can see, oh, there is, this thing has potential and can go further. That's a good, great idea. I feel a little bit validated on this kind of strategy. But with all that, we ran through all the things I wanted to go through in this topic. It was super useful for me. Thanks for the discussion and thanks for the ideas. I hope that might be useful or interesting for our listeners as well. And before we close, I think one thing that we should mention, that next week is going to be the book club episode, and we are reading / listening, however you call it, book called How Big Things Get Done. And I think you already listened / read the book. I already started listening to the book, and boy, oh boy, I have things to say about the book. I think it's going to be interesting discussing this thing with you next
time. Looking forward to that.
All right, and then until that, good weeks.
Yeah, good ones.